You're listening to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast. I'm your host, Lizzie Benton, company culture coach and founder of Liberty Mind, and I want to inspire people to create progressive company cultures where our human potential can thrive. In this podcast, I talk to organizations, thought leaders, and change makers about the impact of company culture. Together, we can make it thrive. This year, Make It Thrive is supporting Teal Around the World, one of the biggest conferences dedicated to the Teal philosophy. With around 5,000 participants since it first started, Teal Around the World brings together keynote speakers, practical workshops, and storytelling sessions, gathering experienced pioneers and thought leaders like Frederick Laloux, Jos and Thijs de Blok, Gary Hamel, Doug Kirkpatrick, Daniela Lander, and Ricardo Semler, sharing their stories based on practical experiences ranging from startups to huge corporations. Thanks to Teal Around the World, attendees have been empowered to start a change within themselves and their spheres of influence. Now, entering a new era, Teal Around the World would like to bring inspiration to real life. The best part being real connection, building relationships, and creating a network of possibilities. In 2025, Teal Around the World will adopt a hybrid format. Global hubs in different locations all around the world will host local keynotes and storytellers live on stage. This conference will give a chance for participants to experience hands-on workshops in small groups, short speaker reflection sessions, holistic and out-of-the-box experiences, whilst having people from other parts of the globe join virtually. If you'd like to know more, please check out their website in the show notes or consider donating to their crowdfunding page. We hope you'll join us on a venture to change the world. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast, where this season we're attempting to make the intangible more tangible. If you listen on Spotify, you may notice that there's a question at the end of each episode, and I'll be collecting the answers to these ready for the wrap-up episode of this season. So if you get a chance, do take a moment to answer them, and I'll aim to respond to all of them in the final episode of this season. So, on to the topic of this episode. Today, I'm joined by Dr. David Hall as he shares with us the true essence of creativity and how to truly practice creative thinking in our organizations. As we all know, creativity and innovation are not just a fluffy nice to have, but critical to support businesses in adapting to customer needs, remaining relevant in their market, and remaining resilient in the face of a crisis. After connecting with Dave and being inspired by his way of thinking about creativity and the successes he's had, I knew I had to get him on the podcast. Dave is an experienced chief executive, having operated across a number of science and engineering-based organizations. He has an innate passion for driving innovation, which really comes across in this episode. And he's developed a unique approach to using some of the most unusual creativity techniques to both embed and then drive the innovation process. Dave set up the Ideas Center in 2011 to help organizations to escape from more of the same conventional and traditional thinking. In this episode, Dave not only shares why we need to think differently about creativity on both a personal and organizational level, but also provides some fun practices that we can all take away and experiment with. So, let's dive in.
Hi, Dave, and welcome to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast.
Lizzie, it's an absolute pleasure to be involved. So thank you for that.
Oh, wow. Thank you for joining me, because it's not every day that you meet someone who is a specialist in the realm of creativity. That's not someone you meet every day.
No, it's a niche offering, I think, it must be said.
A very required one as well in this point in time. First of all, I really want to know, Dave, how on earth you ended up here, because I'm sure that journey is interesting and our audience would love to know.
Well, I've got to say, I'm probably the least creative person. I would never have considered myself as creative by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not sure any of my colleagues would have done either. But many years ago, probably about 30 years ago, I was doing some management training at the time, and I stumbled across a course on creative management. It was introduced to me as a free hit, more or less. I was doing a qualification. acquiring points through various courses, and someone snuck up behind me. I was doing some very sensible manufacturing courses. I was manufacturing director in an organization in the oil and gas sector at the time. And the HR director came up behind me and said, Dave, you should have a look at a course here. He said, it's a weird course. It's all about creativity. It's badly presented. It's just a jumble of stuff, really. So he wasn't selling it to me at this moment in time. He said, people tend to leave the course in droves. So he really wasn't selling it to me. He said, but the plus side is it's only a 6-month course. And at the end of it, there's an exam. If you manage to stagger your way through to the exam, no one in the history of the course has ever failed the exam. He said, what's more, the second you walk out of the exam, anyone in their right mind will forget everything they ever came across in the course, because no one in their right mind would ever want to use it. So it was like a kind of free hit towards your qualification with 3 points, more or less, if you manage to stagger your way through with this kind of resilience. So and in the same breath, he said, and we think it's right up your street, which was kind of an odd backhanded compliment, I think. That's how I chose to take it. So I launched into it, and the manufacturing courses I was doing, the kind of classic manufacturing stuff and management stuff, was dull as dishwater, quite frankly. Creativity course, genuinely life-changing. No matter how badly presented, I stumbled across a whole range of techniques within it that when you come to use them, no matter how badly you apply them in the very early stages, and it only improves with time, you start generating ideas the like of which I'd never seen before, but which in retrospect seem blindingly obvious. And it's that dull moment when you think, crikey, never seen that before. If you've got techniques that will help you release that potential, then why wouldn't you do more of it? So it's the one piece of learning I did that I carried through my entire career and took wherever I went.
Oh my goodness, that's incredible, Dave. What a story. And I suppose, were you quite, when you're going onto that course, were you quite skeptical and thinking, oh, I'm just going to do this? Like, what changed your mind during that experience?
Well, I think I had probably the attitude and the feeling that most people would do if they were going into a creativity session, which is slightly uncomfortable and kind of certainly out of my... I was a scientist and engineer, for goodness sake. I was used to being in control. Give me an equation that I can run this by. And everything I knew about creativity was all about letting go and being unbounded in your thinking. And what I discovered was that's not quite true. There's a process behind this stuff. And if you pick your way through it, very early on in the course, we had, it was classic distance learning stuff, where you have to get a group of people together and try one of these weird techniques. And I had 250 safety engineers that worked with me on the shop floor. So I figured surely I can find two or three that would help me out. Well, they worked for me. They had little choice, I suppose. But anyway, two or three, late one Friday afternoon, when everyone else had gone home, we sat there in the boardroom. And just to show you, it dates me, but also shows how comfortable I was with this. I put computer paper all over the windows for fear that someone walking past would see what we were up to in this session, this weird stuff, and would think less of me for it. So anyway, we did this. We had a pact that no one else would ever talk about this session again after we left it. It was like, what happens in creativity stays in creativity. We never talk. There's the pact. Just blank each other. But very early on, taking these very unusual techniques and applying them, we were generating ideas genuinely the like of which we'd never seen before. Went out and applied the solutions, and damn it, they worked. So you think, well, hang on, I don't care how weird this stuff is. If these techniques work, then what I need to do is to understand these techniques so we can embed them inside the organization, because then we can generate them on demand. And the underlying processes that sit behind the techniques were the enlightening thing for me. When you dig behind it, you discover there's a whole range of techniques. It's not the way it was presented to me. But if you start with an observation that these techniques work, why do they work? And how can I tear them apart and put a process that underpins them? And once you find it, you think, well, crikey, this is a jewel. This is a gift. We should do more of this. And every one of the creativity techniques has an underlying set of rules. And provided you understand that, these techniques work like a dream. So once you see it working, why wouldn't you stay with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't you use those tools?
Well, and I took the techniques wherever I went. I went to run a contract electronics company, stuffing printed circuit boards for other people, took the techniques in there. We transformed the place. Took the technique. I used to run the laboratory for doping control activity in British horse racing. Took the techniques in there, not the obvious place. It was a hotbed of forensic science, for goodness sake. We transformed the organization based on thinking differently. And what I discovered was these techniques help you understand what happens inside your head that locks you inside more of the same thinking. We every organization across the land says they want to do things differently. They typically get groups of experts together, lock them in a room, tell them to think differently. Everyone goes, yeah, we'll think differently. And as soon as they start, you get more of the same. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why that happens. And if you understand why it happens, what's happening inside your head that locks you in that space, then you begin to appreciate how, by definition, some really unusual techniques can help you escape. And they have to be unusual, because they have to mess with your head. Because if they do not challenge your conventional and traditional thinking, then all you're going to end up with is more of the same. Mm-hmm. So the techniques are bound to feel odd. They're going to feel weird because they're unconventional and untraditional. Because you cannot use convention and tradition to escape from convention and tradition. So you must use unusual, unconventional techniques. And they work.
Amazing. Oh my goodness, Dave. Well, I really want to dive into some of these techniques, but I suppose one of the questions that just came to me as well is that you obviously support organizations and run sessions for teams around creativity. Do you still get some of that old school skepticism of people coming to your sessions or when you're doing things? And has that changed? What's kind of different to when you went on that creativity course?
No, that hasn't changed at all. That hasn't changed at all. And what it means is you have to introduce it very carefully. I think it's kind of what gives creativity a bad name, because the techniques are unusual and they mess with your head and it's uncomfortable, almost by definition, because we don't like that. We like more of the same. And that's one of our, that's partly what locks us in this world of what is, where you end up with more of the same thinking. So you need to have an underlying line of logic that you can share with people, hold them by the hand, take them through the unfolding of the theory behind it, until they end up in a place where it becomes blindingly obvious that these unusual techniques are what it takes to think very differently. And the vast majority of people that you're exposed to, if you take them on that journey, they start skeptical, but as they work through, they get that enlightening moment when they think, you've just described us, we're trapped. What we need to do is escape. We need these techniques. Because what you're offering is transformation.
Yeah.
What you're actually offering is innovation, because people talk about innovation and every organization across the land claims to be innovative, but they're not. What they're doing is kind of supercharged continuous improvement. It's more of the same, making things better. It is not transformational. And innovation is all about thinking very differently. And for that, we need help. And that's where the creativity comes in. So creativity is the precursor to innovation. And once you see that, you begin to understand there's method behind the madness and this stuff works.
Well, I'm intrigued now, Dave, because I want to, will you share one of these techniques with us?
No problem at all. Before I do it, I need to give you a definition of creativity, because people are going to think less of me if I just go straight into the techniques. They're going to wonder what on earth I'm doing, for goodness sake. So we have a very simple definition of creativity. It's like, I always reckon that if any organization claims to be innovative, certainly if they claim to have innovation as a value, I should be able to stop any two people in that organization and ask them for a definition of the word innovation. I'm yet to find any organization in the land that can do that. People like to say they're innovative without understanding what the word means. Creativity is kind of worse, because it's pink and fluffy and a bit silly and a bit uncomfortable around the edge. It's like improv, for goodness sake. We all kind of flirt with it, but it makes us scared at the same time. And unless you can define it, it's the scientist within me, I guess, that how on earth can you manage something if you cannot define it? So the definition is a key as a starting point. So we have a very simple definition of creativity, which, as far as I'm concerned, is universal. Creativity is simply the process of generating ideas that are both novel and useful. So it's the combination of novelty and usefulness. And by novelty, people get very philosophical at this point and stroke their chin and go, what do you really mean by the word? What is novel, for goodness sake? Novel's quite straightforward. Lizzie, if you've got a problem you can't solve, and I can give you an idea you've never thought of before, I reckon that's novel to you.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to go and research whether someone else in the world has ever come across it. Why would I waste my time? If you're the problem owner and I've given you an idea you've never thought of before, that's novel. And if you're excited because you can see how to make it work, then you can see how to take that novel idea and make it useful. The problem we have is that every single one of us as adults is fabulous at useful. We are brilliant at useful because useful ideas are based on our past experience.
Yeah.
And we've all acquired as adults considerable array of past experience. So the majority of problems, there's something in our past experience that'll give us an angle on it. And that'll be a useful idea, more of the same based on what you've seen before. As adults, however, we are all universally rubbish at novel. So we're brilliant at useful, but we're rubbish at novel. And the reason we're rubbish at novel is because novel is an idea we've never had before. It's a new connection in the brain. Useful ideas are based on existing connections in the brain. And so we're very quick to useful, but horrendously slow to novel, because novel ideas are slow to form because you have to create a new connection in the brain. So if I ask you for a novel and useful idea, quick as a flash, you'll give me a useful idea. And once you've got a useful idea, you're trapped in your world of what is, which is very well behaved, and you're comfortable with it. And any attempt to reverse novelty into it, you'll reject it. So we're brilliant at useful, rubbish at novel. Therein lies our problem. So all these techniques build upon a two-stage process. And the first stage is the critical stage that tends to freak people out. The first stage is forget useful entirely, because if you got useful, you get trapped in more of the same. What you need first is novel. So I want a novel idea that is useless, but it must solve the problem, if only it were possible. We call it an intermediate impossible. So it's a novel idea that's useless. It would solve the problem if only it were possible. And people often say, I didn't get where I am today by generating useless ideas. And you go, no, that's because continuous improvement is based on useful ideas. We put into that. But you're rubbish at novel. Therefore, you're rubbish at innovation. So you need help. And techniques will help you generate it. So stage one of creativity, you want a novel idea that's useless. It can be bonkers, ridiculous, outrageous. Quite frankly, for me, it can be illegal, indecent, amoral. I don't care. But the key thing is it must solve the problem, if only it were possible. Is this making sense, Lizzie?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm loving this.
So first stage, novel and useless. Intermediate, impossible. It's a stepping stone. What we then do is say, well, here's our novel and useless idea. It works, but why does it work? So we need to identify the characteristics that make it work. And once you've got the characteristics, you get rid of the idea, but hold on to those characteristics. Because stage two is doing what we're good at. Find a useful idea that has exactly the same characteristics. Bingo, you end up with a useful idea that has all the characteristics of the novel idea. Can't fail. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that is mind-blowing.
So, right, and every technique works that way. So we have a technique called superheroes. And what I've got is this pack of cards. On every card is the definition of a different superhero. So we've got Spider-Man, we've got Superman, we've got Poison Ivy, we've got Human Torch, we've got a whole range of, we've got them all, but we've got them all. So what we do in a small group of people, if we've got a creativity session to generate breakthrough thinking, what I'll do is give each of the players one card. And on their card, they will have a superhero. So if I'm Wonder Woman, I have to read Wonder Woman's card. On the back of the card, there's a definition of all Wonder Woman's superhero skills. So I have to read it out to everyone in the room. And as I read it out, bear with me, I need to channel that superhero into my very bones so I become Wonder Woman. So I've become Wonder Woman, and I need to become Wonder Woman. I've got Superman in the room with me. I've got Batman and Poison Ivy in the room with me. So we've got four different superheroes in the room. So everyone reads their card, becomes that superhero. We then have to brainstorm solutions to the business problem in the style of the superhero. So if I'm solving it as Wonder Woman, I've got magic bracelets, lasso of truth, I've got remarkable strength, I've got an airline that's invisible, by the way, I've got a whole range of things. Batman's got a whole range of other things. He's got the Boy Wonder, and he's got all his bat gadgets and what have you. And you got all these different superheroes have different gear and different skills. Every superhero can solve any problem. You never get a superhero movie where the opening credits die down, Wonder Woman tips up and says, what seems to be the problem? And she goes, can't solve that. Closing credits, end of film. That never happens. Wonder Woman can solve any problem. So what I do is I, as Wonder Woman, brainstorm how Wonder Woman's going to solve the problem. And it's effectively the screenplay of the film in which Wonder Woman solves the problem. Meanwhile, I've got a Batman screenplay, I've got a Superman screenplay, and I've got a Poison Ivy screenplay. So I've got four different screenplays of four different films in which the problem is definitely, definitely solved. They're novel. Well, of course they are. They're based on superheroes. We're not normal. We don't normally do that. But they're useless. Well, of course they are, because, spoiler alert, these superheroes don't exist.
Yeah.
So they're novel and useless, but they would solve the problem if only they were possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely.
There's
Amazing.
my intermediate. I've got that gives me four intermediate impossibles. Pick the best of them, whatever that is. It's normally the most outrageous. All you have to do then is effectively treat each of the screenplays as a metaphor for something in the real world. So if Wonder Woman can solve the problem, what are the characteristics of that screenplay that you tell a friend as you come out of the movie? You say, you never guess what happened. This is what happened. And you tell all the characteristics, you get rid of the Wonder Woman content, then find a useful idea on your based on your context that has exactly the same set of characteristics. Because any idea with the same characteristics of the Wonder Woman solution will also solve the problem. Does that make sense?
Oh my goodness, yes.
Cannot fail, provided you follow the rules. And this is kind of one of those counterintuitive things that people always think, well, creativity is rule-free. You just let your mind run wild, which is what upsets a lot of people because it's just weird. I can't do that. And it's wrong because every one of these techniques, there's a discipline behind it and there's a process. You're effectively playing a game. Young children are inherently brilliant at creativity because they're unbounded. So they can, you tell them the rule, you tell them what we're playing, bang, they'll go, and they'll make up bits and pieces around the edges. Adults are rubbish at play unless we have rules. But if we have rules, we can have a great old game, provided everyone follows the rules. Because it just takes one person breaking the rules to destroy the game. It
Yeah.
just takes one of the people in the creativity session to break down the superhero technique and not follow the rules, and the whole thing fails. People often come up with a crazy Batman idea that's just wild and crazy and unbounded. It wouldn't solve the problem, but it's definitely Batman-y. That screenplay then translates into an idea. It's a metaphor for an idea in the real world that will definitely not solve the problem, because Batman hasn't solved the problem in the in Batman world. So when you translate it, don't be surprised, it also won't solve the problem. So the discipline is the superhero solution must definitely solve the problem. And effectively, you need a facilitator, the keeper of the rules, to make sure everyone, while they're having a great playful time, they're following the rules of the game. And every creativity technique is effectively a game to unleash that breakthrough thinking. And we can do it through play. And you should only ever get people who are prepared to play involved in creativity sessions. It just takes one miserable so-and-so tutting or rolling their eyes, make everyone else go, crikey, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. And all of a sudden it falls flat.
Yeah, oh
But
my
these techniques are fabulous, provided you're prepared to play.
my goodness, honestly, those have just blown my mind, Dave, because we know that creativity is about forming those new connections, isn't it? Like you said, about getting new connections in the brain and kind
Absolutely.
of establishing that, and so much of what we do in the day-to-day is so habitual that it's so rare that we experience anything new or anything different, or we try, like, how as an adult have you been a beginner again, or put yourself
Absolutely.
in that vulnerable position of being a student and learning something new? So it's so rare that we get that experience that we need these techniques in order to and start triggering these brain cells.
And you see it in everyday life, that backward-looking perspective. And part of our problem is we make sense of our worlds by looking backwards. So you've got a problem that pops in your life today. The first thing you're going to do is look back at past experience, training, education, whatever's happened in your past. You scan your past to see what's in there that's relevant, grab it, apply it. That then determines your future behavior, which fundamentally means that your future behavior is absolutely conditioned by your past experience. So something as simple, two things. From a business point of view, I always say to organizations, if you give me your management accounts for the last 3 years, I'll have a damn good shot at what your budget's going to be next year. Because I'm going to do exactly what you do, which is to look back at what your trajectory is, project forward, work out what you can get away with from a shareholder point of view with regard to the budget. That becomes your budget. From a personal point of view, how many families, and I'm as guilty as anyone, end up going on the same old holidays? Because where should we go for holiday next year? Well, you instantly think back to all the holidays you've enjoyed in the past and say, well, that was brilliant. We should do that again. So I came to skiing quite late. And my wife and I, Annalise and I, got married in our early 20s, quite earlier than the rest of our friends. And we had children more or less straight away. By the time I was 30, I've got three young boys. Everyone else was swanning around the world doing fancy things and going on skiing. Quite frankly, it was just kind of, there's no way on God's earth I was going to be doing any of that stuff. And just no way. But later on, we discovered that we went on a skiing holiday with the boys when they were in the teenage when they were late teenagers. We had a fabulous time. We went to Merribel. It was just expensive, but fabulous. And so we went again the following year. And we thought, where do we go? Well, we had a great time at Merribel, so why don't we go back to Merribel? I can talk and bore the socks off you about skiing like a good one. So I can have all the stories and the après-ski, all those stories. But my only source of experience is Merribel, because we always end up going to Merribel. Because Anne-Louise knows the slopes that she can go on where she's not going to fall down and have an accident. She's convinced she's going to die if she goes on the wrong slope, for goodness sake. But she knows she won't do that in Merribel because she's safe. She's been there before. The boys know where all the bars are, so they're comfortable because they know where they're going. There's no discovery involved. You just kind of go because it's safe, day one. So I've never, we had a grandson, Maxwell. We got a grandson, Maxwell, and we thought we'll go skiing. Where should we go? And we thought, well, he's too young for, he's only one or two. He's too young for skiing. But so where do we know that he can go tobogganing? I know, Merribel. So we can go there because so we end up going to Merribel with the grandchildren. It's just bonkers. It's exactly what businesses do.
Yeah.
It's exactly what every individual does in every walk of life, because your past experience governs your future behavior. One of the other techniques that we use, I always say to organizations, if you're serious about creativity, forge a relationship with your local primary school. If you've got a problem you can't solve, take it into a classroom of 6 or 7 year olds. Top tip, before you waltz into a classroom of 6 or 7 year olds, get permission from the headmaster or headmistress. That's part of that on one side. If you can explain your problem to a class of kids, younger kids, 5 year olds too young, they haven't got the attention span. 10 year olds too late because they're already trying to be adults, because mm-hmm. the education system and parenting is doing it to them. Take them 6 or 7. Explain your problem to them in terms that they can relate to. Take all the corporate speak out of it. So make it something they're relatable for them. Give them pens and paper, break them into pairs, ask them to draw solutions to your problem. I promise you, the room explodes with energy. Everyone just yattering away, and there's loom bands over it, self-replenishing ice cream, all sorts of weird things that no adult would ever dream of, quite frankly. But young children do not know what's possible and what's not possible because they're unbounded. So you get brilliant. You have to walk around and listen to the conversations, because you know somewhere along the line you're going to have to interpret their drawings. And if you think about it, 10 minutes on when they finish their drawing, every drawing from a child's perspective would definitely solve the problem. It's novel, but of course it is, because they don't know the rules of the game.
Yeah.
But it's useless. Well, of course it is, because they don't know what's going to work and what's not going to work. So hang on, that's novel and useless. It will definitely solve the problem if only it were possible. That is the perfect metaphor again. So all we have to do as adults, thank the kids for the drawings, take them away, identify in each drawing what makes it work, what are the characteristics. Once you've got the characteristics, do what we're good at as adults, find a useful way of delivering exactly the same set of characteristics, exactly like superheroes, but work with the kids to generate the novel and useless idea. Never fails. Never fails. Children are fabulous and novel because they haven't learnt, they haven't been overconditioned, but they are rubbish but useful. They are intermediate impossible machines.
Yeah.
By the time they're 10, they're beginning to lose it.
Yeah. Oh, do you know, it's so true. I've got nieces and nephews, and some of the things they come up with, I'm just like, well, yeah, why not?
Why not? Indeed. I mean, it's just bonkers stuff, but it works. Loads of it. It just takes a bit of courage to go into the classroom to do it. And once you understand why it works, you think, well, hang on, of course they're going to produce something that's novel but useless. But it will work. So it's weird. So all we have to do is interpret it and then embed it back into the organization or into the context of the adult world. Yeah. Bingo. Can't fail.
So with these companies that keep saying that they're innovative and creative, what do you kind of say to them about embedding creativity into their organization? Because obviously when we talk about creativity, in the reality of things, it always comes to the bottom of the to-do list. It's not really done properly. It's one of those awful things where people say, let's have a creative brainstorming session, and they all go into a meeting room and it's like, what's the ideas?
Well, and let me say just at the outset, brainstorming sessions almost designed not to be creative, because what you typically do is get groups of experts together and lock them in a room. Hang on, the experts are the creators and the guardians of what we've always done around here. They are most likely to generate more of the same. But to counteract it, and there's a counteracting element that we put in there because we know this is a problem, we tell them not to filter. So if an idea comes in your head, you spit it straight out. In other words, we want them to generate the idea quickly. Hang on, useful ideas are quick to generate. Novel ideas are slow to generate. So if you get a group of experts and tell them to quickly brainstorm ideas, I guarantee you, all you'll get is a long list of useful ideas. And you'll trick yourself into thinking it was fabulous as a session, because look how long that list is. But they are all continuous improvement ideas, which is fine, but it's not innovation. So the trick is, and people always think I'm anti-continuous improvement, which is not the case at all. Continuous improvement is brilliant, but it's based on useful ideas, not novel. It's just you want lots and lots and lots of small incremental changes. So that's great. And it's a numbers game. So you want, it's like a cultural revolution. Your idea want the culture of continuous improvement, because then you get more ideas, because lots of tiny ideas add up to a big idea. When it comes to creativity, creativity is generating novel and useful ideas. Innovation, by the way, is making money out of creativity. So it's the implementation thing. You do not need many step function changes in any year in any organization. What, 3 or 4 max in any organization? So you don't need many of them. So it's not a numbers game. This has got to be driven top down, and you want a small group of people that understand how these techniques work. So you end up with a problem owner, senior manager maybe, who's got a strategic challenge. If you don't need many step function changes in a year, choose them carefully. Choose them strategically. In other words, they should be owned by the senior management team. So a senior manager says, I need to think differently in this area. How can you help us? Go to the team of creativity, who can then work with the problem owner and help him, her, understand by applying the techniques how to break out and generate that breakthrough moment. So it's not numbers you're after. It's actually a small group of people who get it and understand it and can deliver the service to everyone else in the organization that then gently grows over time. This is a viral thing. So you only need 3 or 4 people to do it on day one.
Yeah.
It's not a cultural revolution until you've got everyone involved. When I was in the doping control lab, we had about 180 people, 190 people, and we started off with just 3 or 4 of us. By the time we finished, which was about 4 years later, we would recruit people based on their attitude to creativity. But you couldn't do that on day one. But by the time, 3 or 4 years down the line, we didn't want to employ anyone who wouldn't get involved with the creativity.
Yeah.
But it took us 3 or 4 years to get there. This is a viral thing. You want to infect the organization with the thrill and excitement of transformational thinking and get it to grow in the organization until it's kind of part of just what we do around here. I mean, my dream has always been, what you want is 2 people sat over having a cup of coffee. And one of them says to the other at the tea break, coffee break, says, I've got a problem. I've been trying to solve it. I can't solve it. And the other person says to them, well, how would poison ivy solve that problem? And they go, crikey, that's interesting. So rather than thinking, what? What they go is, well, that's interesting. How would poison ivy solve? Oh, tell me what she'd do. She'd probably do this, that, and the other. And the other person goes, well, that's brilliant. So the characteristics of that are this. So what does that mean we need to do? Brilliant. Problem solved over a cup of coffee. Just on the fly, rather than it being a set piece creative activity.
Yeah,
and it can work. It just takes time. You have to have patience to let it spread.
Yeah, the culture of creativity being this organic evolution. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know. And it does not mean you wander around continuously coming out with weird ideas and messing with weird techniques. It doesn't mean that, because 99.999% of the time, all you want is a useful idea. You don't need a novel idea. But when you know that you need to break free and you can't, then you just need a small group of people, one side. You never take people away for residential weekends with expensive consultants. I mean, those things are life-changing and they last about 48 hours, because by Wednesday of the following week, it's a dim and distant memory. What you need is organically in the organization to have a small group of people that can meet for an hour. None of these techniques, we never take more than 60 minutes for a creative session. Problem comes in, cracking idea comes out. What you do in the session, quite frankly, stays in the session. But the idea that comes out is the transformational idea you're looking for.
So how do you recruit people into these kind of creative thinking groups then, Dave? Because one thing I certainly hear when I'm working with teams is the classic, well, I'm not creative. I'm not the creative person.
And it starts with, they're wrong. What it means is, they became trapped as they grew up, because as they grew up, schooling fills your head full of stuff. Parenting fills your head full of stuff. And I say, I've got three boys. I mean, the youngest of those, they're all in the 30s, quite frankly, which is quite scary and dates me again somewhat. But I remember with discomfort, you know, when they were 9 or 10, how many times did you say things like, oh, for goodness sake, you're not a child anymore, grow up. What you're saying is, I've shown you how to behave, behave like I behaved, because I've given you the rules of the game, follow my rules. And so what tends to happen is we cramp out the novelty, because we're giving people more and more useful young people as they grow up. And all it means is, when people say we're not creative, they're wrong. What it means is they're still trapped and they haven't learned how to break free. And these techniques, and every one of these techniques is like a boxed game for creativity. So you open the creativity cupboard, never have a creativity cupboard, but you open the creativity cupboard, you pull out a technique, you lift the lid off the box. The first thing you see is a set of rules. Provided you follow the rules, you're away. And in order to infect an organization with creativity, if I can use that term nicely, what I would normally do is just get a kind of a, we just do lunchtime learning sessions where you just kind of gently introduce everyone. You know, anyone is interested in thinking differently, come and have a look. You'll have a laugh while you're doing it, because fundamentally, these techniques are based on playfulness. So people have to be used to having a laugh because they're funny.
Yeah.
Because the playful thing is breaking free from what you know are the rules and regulations. Well, we're inviting people to solve the problem as Superman, for goodness sake. And I always do these in regulated environments. I did it in oil and gas, I did it in controlled drugs environment. You've got the weird things go on. They're great laugh. And all you need to do at the end of the presentation is say, well, if anyone's interested in following on just trying one of these techniques, let me know. We'll just meet for an hour over lunch somewhere on the line. I'll bring the sandwiches along and we'll have a go at one of the techniques. And what you discover is, first session, people walk out going, how on earth did that happen? Because we generated ideas that were brilliant and they'd work.
Yeah.
So people always think it's high risk. This stuff isn't high risk. What you're doing is overcoming mental blocks. Once you overcome the mental block, in retrospect, you've moved the mental block and you have a direct line of sight back to the problem. So the ideas you generate typically look obvious in retrospect because you've moved a mental block.
Amazing.
What's not to like? No one gets hurt. Have a laugh while you're doing it.
Exactly. Having some fun along the way. Isn't that what it's all about?
It's shocking, really. I mean, and people get uncomfortable and they always look to the bosses to make sure they're giving permission by the look on their face. Because if they're not giving permission, because they're used to thinking, we're not meant to have a laugh when we're doing this stuff. Some of the most powerful creativity sessions we've had, I've felt uncomfortable as I've walked out. Because we've had such a laugh, because we let go.
Yeah.
And yet those are the most powerful ideas you end up with. You walk out thinking, crikey, we could make this happen. And yet you're still left tainted slightly by the fact you had a good laugh while you were doing it, which is weird. And you have to learn to accept it.
Yeah, like work's not allowed to be fun.
I don't know where that rule crept in, but somewhere along the line, it's crept in. You're not supposed to laugh at work, for goodness sake.
But saying that, you know, around that sense of vulnerability, because I suppose in some sense, creativity is a bit of a risky behaviour to us as adults, would you say?
I think it's perceived as being risky. And I think people often say that, you know, that they're not creative or they're uncomfortable around creativity. It's because of a misunderstanding of what creative is. And there's a mystique about it. I always think it's like in kind of private life, it's like improv. So if you go to an improvisation session, there's always kind of a nervous excitement, but it's a nervous excitement. And all but, you know, anyone with any sanity avoids the first two rows of the improv kind of layout, because you don't want to be picked on, because it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be weird. You don't want that. There's always some insane individuals who camp out on the front row, but the majority of people feel uncomfortable with it. And creativity is the same. There's kind of a rolling of the eyes, and it really is that weird stuff. And it's because we don't understand it. And if you understand that creativity is generating novel and useful ideas, continuous improvement is using useful ideas, but forgetting the novelty, because what you want is incremental improvement. And the clue is in the words. You want more of something, you want less of something, you want to enhance something, you want to increase something, you want to decrease something. People often say to me, boards often say, we need to increase profitability. And I can solve any organization that wants to increase profitability, I can tell you how to do it now for free, no charge. Because all you have to do is take what you've been doing to try and increase profitability and try a little bit harder. Because if you try a little bit harder, they will work a little bit better and generate you a little bit more profit. And all you've asked for is an increase in profit. So try harder, you'll get an increase in profit. You want to reduce staff turnover? Try harder. Because if you try harder, you'll reduce it. It might only be by 0.001%, but that's a reduction, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
So we don't articulate it. If you understand that, and if you understand that the novelty is the key thing and the prize, but it needs to be carefully nurtured and taken in isolation from useful and then converted to useful. It's such a logical process. And once you understand that, there is no mystique behind it. And of course, you're bound to have a laugh while you're doing it, because we understand the origin of children and we understand how people think. So you demystify it and it becomes serious creativity.
I wish I could talk to you for longer, because honestly, Dave, this has been amazing. So yeah, just thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom with us. Is there any final points you would like to share with our audience as we say our goodbyes?
No, I don't think so. I think what I'd say is have an open mind and don't shut out creativity because you view yourself as not naturally creative. That's nonsense. We've all got it within us. We just need to understand there are rules and processes that you need to follow to release it. If you understand that, you're away. Transformative.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today, Dave.
Absolute pleasure. An absolute pleasure.
You've been listening to Make It Thrive, the Company Culture Podcast, with me, your host, Lizzie Benton. If you've enjoyed listening and want to keep up with all things culture, don't forget to subscribe. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you back next week.